Hey, everybody. Food shortages, chaos, and more? What is coming to America? Keith Rose helps us unpack that international intelligence expert. We get a quick update from the Dutch farmer revolt happening in the Netherlands, the citizen versus the Great Reset, and then one of the more extraordinary Senate hearings I've ever heard. Senator Josh Hawley gets called transphobic, rather smugly, from a professor at UC Berkeley. And also, abortion is an act of love. You just got to listen to the whole episode. I can't even believe it. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. And get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Come to our Student Action Summit at Turning Point Action. We are going to have the amazing Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. Also have Kayleigh McEnany, Ted Cruz, Laura Ingraham, Josh Hawley, Greg Gutfeld, Donald Trump Jr., Kat Timpf, Pete Hegseth, and more. tpusa.com/SAS. That is tpusa.com/SAS. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. What is going on with the amount of, let's say, arsons, points of destruction that are happening at food plants and farms across America? There are 95 of them. Now, if we had an actual media in our country, they'd be investigating, why have 95 food plants been destroyed? Why, for example, just in the last couple days, 30,000 ducks destroyed at Duck Farm in Berks, Pennsylvania. 3 million chickens destroyed at Forsman Egg Farm facility in Stockholm Township, Minnesota. 200,000 chickens killed in fire in Minnesota. Is this normal? Well, you might remember we had a conversation with Keith Rose back in November of last year, and Keith predicted that we were going to have a fertilizer shortage and potentially have food shortages. I remember, I still have the emails, people thought that we were exaggerating, we were making it up. Well, Keith is an international intelligence expert, and he's been right, and those lunatics are wrong, and he joins us right now. Keith, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Charlie. Good to be here.
Keith, what's going on with the food shortage in America, with the food plants that are being destroyed? What's the story here that we might be missing?
Charlie, I think we have to kind of go up to 100,000 feet and look at the total picture. Like you said, the food plants, there's been several accidents, fires, whatever you want to call it, food plants. There's been a large number of poultry plants or places that store poultry that the chickens have just been dying. We're seeing food. We're starting to see the evidence of food shortages. So one or two of those plant fires, one or two of those incidences might be, you know, happenstance. But when you see them all together, on top of the shortages in fertilizer, on top of the shortages in chemicals for pesticides, on top of the blocking of major railways from transporting goods from the West Coast, you're starting to see a picture come together where I believe this is a coordinated effort to bring shortages to cause some type of chaos. I don't know what. I can just tell you what I'm seeing. We're seeing what's going on right now in California, where independent truckers may have to leave California or just stop working. That's 70,000 independent truckers, which is a large portion of the supply chain. And this is an intentional dig into those independent truckers and to slow down our supply chain. And it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it just feels like intentional destabilization. And we just got an email, freedom@charliekirk.com, who said, I like this guy. I remember him being on the show. He's always been right on target. So you should consider that a great compliment for the super fans of the Charlie Kirk Show. And you seem to be on top of this. So, Keith, I don't want to reveal too much that you and I were chatting over the weekend because some of it was a little bit sensitive. But do you think a war might be looming? Just kind of the spidey senses that you have seem to have been triggered. Do you think there might be a conflict coming our way sometime soon?
Charlie, that's a great question. And it's one I wish or I pray that our military and intelligence services are looking at, because you've had a series of events, the loss of the former prime minister, the murder of him in Japan, that is a good ally of President Trump and just America in general and the conservative movement in America. And he was a strong voice. So you see that, and it makes me think back to when Ahmad Shah was killed before 9/11. And 5 days later, there was a destabilization of that area. The CCP, it's no secret that they hated former Prime Minister Abe. There's been a lot of rumblings in the South China Sea there. On top of that, you have reports down in Venezuela of active Chinese movements, military movements, or some sort of organizational movements, even Russian organizational movements in Venezuela. Now, those are single reports that we're getting, but they're from reliable sources. So are they true? I don't know. But then again, you look at the big picture. You look at what happened 2 weeks ago when Xi essentially just erased the identity of Hong Kong. He now calls it a minor area, South Shenzhen. He no longer even calls it Hong Kong anymore. So there's some major geopolitical shifts that are happening. Iran has, by report, moved their largest warship. I mean, China has, to Iran, their largest deep water warship. So we're seeing a lot of things happen. And then add on top of that an open border, where we have upwards to 500,000 to a million people crossing every month or two. And I was just down on the border. I have a ranch there talking with some people in the border patrol, and the majority, and when they say majority, I asked the guy to be specific. He said almost every single person is between the ages of 18 and 35 male. And so we have open borders, a destabilization in the Chinese, in China, Japan, and the Asian theater. We have food shortages here, and you've said this really well. We're 9 meals away from anarchy. So what I see is a destabilization of our nation. What I see is a lack of timely response to the current problems we have. And then on top of that all, I recently saw reported that we gave the UN $11 billion in 2020. And then the UN gave that back to a few companies here in the U.S., and the majority of that money went to companies that were acquiring transportation companies and that were working in the IT and security sector. And these are companies getting grants up to $65 million. One company got a grant of $97 million from the UN, and the UN has it up on their website, and they're bragging about it. So you see outside forces affecting our nation. You see inside forces confusing our nation. And I think this is a time that we have to speak truth and look for some clarity and not let the media run us in different directions.
Yeah, I mean, if I was the CCP, I'd be doing everything I possibly could to empower the Democrat Party and empower BLM and empower all of these groups that are seeking to divide us. I mean, it's the dream of foreign oligarchs to try to support the racial arsonists here domestically, to try to tear us apart at every single corner. So, Keith, I want to ask you about this article here, betterworldcampaign.org, how the UN advances U.S. economic interests, and what companies specifically are getting UN grants.
Certainly. You have Trigen Technologies, which is a IT company that's real involved with ESG, which is environmental social governance. And you know all about the UNPRI. They got $97 million. They're providing cybersecurity and resources, not only here in the United States, but around the world. You have a company called Reed International, which is a security company out of Virginia. There's not a lot on it on the internet, but they have done work in Afghanistan, but they provide local security. But then you have companies that are really concerning, like Reliance Transportation LLC, and you have another company called Geodis Limited. And Geodis received $65 million. They just bought Gandor Transport, which is a transport company that does a lot of cold storage transport, like vaccine transport. And they got $65 million. So you have literally millions of dollars going to companies in the cybersecurity space. And all of these, by the way, have foreign business registrations that they're owned by a foreign company working here in the U.S., the majority of them. And then you have, they're buying up transportation companies, larger companies buying smaller ones, and they're using it with tax dollars that we gave the UN, because in 2020, before this money was passed out, we gave the UN over $11 billion, and they pushed back $1.9 billion to just a few companies that are doing, that are working in the space that we're talking about, transportation, logistics, supply, wow, all these things that are involved in each one of these companies talks about how they are part of the supply chain, whether it's the IT company working on the cyber components of the supply chain, or whether they're working on the actual trucking components. So again, I think we need to pay attention. We need our leaders to start looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Is it possible that what has happened to the United States and the world from COVID-19 to 9/11 are part of an ancient mystery? Is it a warning? Does the mystery tell us what is yet to come? Do we have the key to uncover it? New York Times bestselling author Jonathan Cahn takes audiences on an epic journey to uncover the stunning mystery. The Harbinger of Things to Come is available at salemnow.com. Uncover the ancient signs that warn of impending calamity. The harbingers that appear in the last days of an ancient nation have now appeared on American soil. The key, the hope, and what you need to know about the future. From Jonathan Cahn comes the explosive motion picture, The Harbinger of Things to Come. If you missed it in theaters, stream it today at salemnow.com. The Harbinger of Things to Come, the one movie you cannot afford to miss. Go to salemnow.com. That is salemnow.com. So, Keith, let me ask you, we got a couple emails here. Charlie, so basically this guy, referring to you, Keith, says we're screwed. Food shortages are here and it's too late. America is over. And the literal message that I'm hearing every day from other conservative programs is it's over. Am I hearing this correctly? Another question here, which is a little bit more, let's just say, positive, which says people are waking up, which I think is great. But from your professional viewpoint, can we survive another 2.5 years of this regime? So is it over, Keith? What are we supposed to do about all this, given the rather dim picture you just articulated?
It's a dim picture, Charlie, but it's not over, because we live in the greatest country in the world. And that's just not words. We have 13,000 miles of interconnected waterways, internal waterways in our country that run through the most fertile plains in the world. That's not a one-off. No one else has even close. That is more than all the other rivers around the world, or actual areas where you can travel inland combined. So we have the ability to grow our own food, transport it internally. That's why we're able to send so much overseas, because the transportation costs are so low, because we are so well interconnected by internal waterways. We still have the will and the fight of the American people. When our founders wrote the Declaration of Independence and they used the word citizen in the Greek, I believe, was co-ruler. We, the people, are the sovereign. So while it's difficult, yes, this can be overcome, but it's going to take awareness and people becoming awake to the issues. The other thing is what you're seeing in the Netherlands, what you're seeing in Sri Lanka, a peaceful protest where everyone goes out and says, we've had enough. That will wake up what I believe are the talking heads in the political elite, because some of them may be part of the problem, but the others aren't helping, and they're definitely not part of the solution. So we need people to wake up and understand what's happening, because this can definitely be reversed, because we are the breadbasket. And the other thing I'd encourage people is, China is not as strong as we make them out to be. China has several regions and none of them get along. China has poor transportation systems. They have an economy that basically just started up industrialization in the 1970s, and they overused their resources. So they are reliant on everything they can bring in. And if we use our Navy correctly, we have a deep water Navy that could cut off China, and they couldn't reach the areas that we could cut off their trade and their resupply. So we have the ability, but China has attacked our leaders, their children, and our will through our leaders. And that's what we have to pay attention to.
That's so smart. What are some of the other weaknesses of China that people need to be aware of? They have an exploding population, which can go both ways. They have a ton of people in poverty. You mentioned the warring factions. The CCP might not be as popular as people think. Xi Jinping might be on the ropes. I think their entire financial system is built on a house of cards. If the labor arbitrage that they've built their entire economy around starts to, let's say, evaporate, I think that they could be in some trouble. Do you think a Chinese century is inevitable, or do you think that they're actually far weaker than our elites actually ever tell us, and that the people that are saying a Chinese century is inevitable actually might be bought by the CCP?
I think the latter, and I can explain with truth. China, as I mentioned, their natural resources are very limited, and they used everything they had at home to push their industrial revolution. They're very young. Their different regions do not get along, and they're not interconnected, Charlie. China is surrounded on all sides by people that don't like them. So China doesn't have friendly nations on their borders. They don't have the ability to transport. They don't have, and this is very important, a deep water navy. Yes, they can work around in the South China Sea, but they do not have the ability to project power or to protect waterways. We just look at the last leg in the ocean when China brings in product, but you could stop that way outside of their Navy capability. But what China is doing is what is known as barbarian management. It's what the ancient Chinese people did when the Mongol hordes, which were much stronger than China, attacked them.
I think we lost Keith Rose there, but that's okay. He was talking about something far too interesting and important. Chinese Communist Party. And as soon as he was going to tell us the great weakness of the CCP, Keith Rose disappeared. It's amazing how that works out.
Look, as you know, our friend Mike Lindell has amazing passion, and especially has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their life. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now Mike has done it again by introducing My Slippers. For a limited time, you'll save $90 on a pair of My Slippers. This blowout sale of the year won't last, so order now. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop this. The My Slippers are designed to wear indoors, out all day long. Made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. Made with quality leather suede. Call 800-875-0425 or click on promo code Kirk or MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square and use promo code Kirk. This offer will not last long, so order now with promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com. Promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com.
This is one exception where when someone in my orbit is going to Amsterdam in the summer, it doesn't mean you're going to Amsterdam in the summer. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, it'll remain a mystery for you. Let's just say that they brag about having themselves be the more licentious capital of Europe. There's something happening in the Netherlands that is profound, and it is historic. There is a farmer revolt happening in the Netherlands. The Dutch are starting to rise up against carbon emission standards and prices. I mean, standards from the government. It's bottom up. It's grassroots. It's a canary in the coal mine. And someone who I've known for quite a while, Turning Point USA leader, and also with the post-millennial Katie Davis Court. Katie is live in the Netherlands outside of the farmer protests in the Netherlands. Katie, what's the story behind this, and tell us about it?
What's up, Charlie? Thanks so much for having me on. You could not have picked a better time, because currently, right now, I am actually in the middle of a convoy. And let me show you. So we are following some tractors, and they are going through the village of Maroom. I'm going to flip my camera. We're following some tractors and some of their supporters, and they are protesting. So I have been on the ground in the Netherlands for the past week or so, working in collaboration with Rebel News. And right now, the farmers, they have taken an uprising against their government, who are imposing radical climate policies on their farmers. And some of these policies include making the farmers give up 30% of their land to their government And we learned this week that they are going to actually seize the land to build housing for immigrants. And they are using the words nitrogen space. So what the government is saying is that they have secured nitrogen space that will allow them to build on these farmers' land. But what is so upsetting is that these farmers are going to be out of their jobs because 30% is a lot to take from them. So the farmers are revolting. They have been protesting everywhere. There's not one central location. This seems to really just be the start of the protest. And it's only going to rise from here because the organizers have released sets of demands. And tomorrow they are actually convening in an area, and they gave them 1 week out. So tomorrow marks the week that they demanded the government to withdraw all restrictions on them. So tomorrow we'll find out if the government comes to the table or if the farmers are, or if that's going to be the end all be all.
They are taking land from the farmers. I encourage every American listener and anyone across the world, research the kulaks. The kulaks were middle-class farmers in the Soviet Union that had their land taken from them because it was deemed to be too much, to take too much from them. So, Katie, let me ask you this. What is the demographic of the people that are protesting here? I've heard it before that it is, that it's more like the deplorables that are rising up, the everyday working muscular class. Tell me about who is actually rising up in the Netherlands. What demographic is this?
Right. Absolutely. There are hard workers, but that is not the case. It is there are polls conducted that show that 85% of the people of the Netherlands support the farmers. And I have found that to be true because every protest that we have gone to, it is just Netherlands citizens. And I even went into Amsterdam the other day to try to get a different perspective because at these protests, the farmers believe that it's the city people that are out of touch with hardworking everyday people such as the farmers. And so I went into Amsterdam to try to get a different perspective. I interviewed left-wing people. I interviewed people that you would think were just radical. And they all said, basically, screw the government. We support the farmers. And something that we keep seeing every location that we go to are the Dutch have turned their flags upside down. And that's also, it's a symbol that the country is in crisis, but they're also, there's also red bandanas that are tied everywhere on cars, on purses, on homes, on top of the flags. And the red bandanas symbolize solidarity with the farmers. And I have not gone to a single place where I haven't seen an upside down flag or red bandanas. The entire nation is almost rising up. And this is not just a national issue. This is an international issue. I'm here with a reporter from the UK, two Rebel News guys, reporter from the UK, from Canada. And I also ran into a Japanese journalist. And she said that the exact same thing is happening, or they all said the same thing is happening in their countries as well. So it is really, the Netherlands is the rise of the citizen. And they are really at the forefront of trying to combat the global elites and the World Economic Forum. And they're doing it. I think they got inspiration from the Canadian truck convoy. And we're really seeing the first like real rise against the global power.
That's so well said. I was going to make that point. You made it for me. So that's, I'll reinforce it, which is let's look broadly here. We had Canadian truckers. We have what's happening in Sri Lanka. We have what's happening with the Dutch farmers. It's all of these worker-centered revolts. And this is really the World Economic Forum. It's Davos versus the citizen. It's the World Health Assembly against the citizen. It's the normal everyday people that go to church and they pay their taxes and they farm the land. They are getting in the way of the own, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Remember, everything on this program we frame for our audience through a Davos globalist lens. And that's why we had the conversation earlier with Senator Kramer about the CCP buying up farmland. It seems to be a lot of the roads to the World Economic Forum go through farmland. It's interesting to think about, right? Bill Gates, carbon emissions, CCP. Katie, in closing, I want you to reinforce a point. Do the metropolitan elite in the Netherlands, the Rotterdam and the Amsterdam, the younger people in the Netherlands, do they support the farmers? Because if they do, then this could change rather quickly against the elites.
Right. They absolutely do. At every protest, we have seen kids, we've seen entire families. It's actually the younger generation that are supporting the farmers the most. So I do believe that if they stick with this, they can get their way. They can get the government to withdraw the insane radical policies.
I wish our government would support these farmers. It would be a 30% land confiscation, all in the name of climate change. Start to see their real agenda. Katie Davis-Court from the Post Millennial, thank you so much. Deeply appreciate it.
Thanks, Charlie. Have a great one.
Thank you. So there was this hearing today on Capitol Hill. And I'm telling you, sometimes I see these hearings and I say, do they just do this for the social media content? There is no useful, there's no utility whatsoever for some of these hearings. So they had, we played this so briefly with Miranda Devine, and she did a beautiful job, by the way, of responding. And it's this college professor. It's a professor who teaches your children. If you send your kid to college, this very well might be the person who teaches you. By the way, I can't think of a better setup for my new book coming up, The College Scam. This right here, this should be the advertisement for my new book. This whole video. So it's Senator Josh Hawley, who's excellent. He's one of the good guys, with the University of California Berkeley Law Professor Kiara Bridges. Now, I want to warn all of you, for those of you that might be on blood pressure medication, this is not the clip for you at all. This will get your heart rate soaring. I saw this and it was just extraordinary. So it's a back and forth between Senator Josh Hawley and Kiara Bridges. Let's play the entire thing. I think we have time for it. This is the person who teaches your kid if you send them to college, unless they go to Hillsdale or a couple other schools. Okay, play tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks to all of the witnesses for being here. Before I want to visit with you, Ms. Maskey, but before I do, I just want to clear one thing up. Professor Bridges, you said several times, you've used a phrase, I want to make sure I understand what you mean by it. You've referred to people with a capacity for pregnancy. Would that be women?
Many women, cis women, have the capacity for pregnancy. Many cis women do not have the capacity for pregnancy. There are also trans men who are capable of pregnancy, as well as non-binary people who are capable of pregnancy.
So this isn't really a women's rights issue. We can recognize
that this impacts women while also recognizing that it impacts other groups. Those things are not mutually exclusive, Senator Hawley.
Oh, so your view is that the core of this right then is about what?
So I want to recognize that your line of questioning is transphobic, and it opens up trans people to violence by not recognizing them.
Wow, you're saying that I'm opening up people to violence by asking whether or not women are the folks who can have pregnancies?
So I want to note that 1 out of 5 transgender persons have attempted suicide. So I think it's important.
Because of my line of questioning?
Because
we can't talk about it?
Because denying that trans people exist and pretending not to know that they exist.
I'm denying that trans people exist by asking
you
if you're talking about women having pregnancies.
Do you believe that men can get pregnant?
No, I don't think
so.
So
you are denying that trans people like this thing.
And that leads to violence? Is this how you run your classroom? Are students allowed to question you?
Absolutely.
Or are they also treated like this?
Where no, no, no. They're
told that they're opening up people to violence.
We have a good time in my class. You should join.
I bet.
You might learn a lot.
Wow. I would learn a lot. I've learned a lot just in this exchange.
Absolutely.
Extraordinary.
Smug, arrogant. Josh Hawley was calm and all this. And I just want to say, when you send your child to college, that's what they're getting exposed to. In a congressional hearing, she goes to a U.S. senator. Do you think men can become pregnant? She says that to Hawley. And he says, no, I don't. You're transphobic. In a congressional hearing, as if she's the enlightened one. So smug, so arrogant. She then tells him he should take her class and he might learn something. By the way, I can't tell you how often I get that. So this woman is Professor Bridges from University of California, Berkeley. And like, I'm not trying to pick on her for any other reason that she was asked to testify in front of the United States Senate. So the Democrats voluntarily decided to bring this person up. Said, hey, can you help explain abortion and trans stuff? So then she goes, starts condescendingly attacking Josh Hawley. And so John Cornyn, I think, is on a little bit of a redemption arc journey after his gun confiscation legislation. of which we believe people can always earn, re-earn political capital by making good decisions. This is a pretty good one. I got to give Cornyn credit. Good question here. Play cut 40 of our new favorite friend from UC Berkeley, Professor Bridges, who's now famous. Play cut 40.
And do you think a baby that is delivered alive has value?
Yes.
Do you think that a baby that is not yet born has value?
I believe that a person with a capacity for pregnancy has value. They have intelligence. They have agency. They have dignity.
I'm talking about the baby.
And I'm talking about the person with the capacity for pregnancy.
And you're not answering the question. I'm asking.
I'm answering a more interesting question to me.
You think that the baby that is not yet born, let's say the day before this mother delivers, do you think that baby has value?
I think that the person with the capacity for pregnancy has value, and they should have the ability to control what happens to their lives.
Well,
I could do a whole hour on just that one clip. She reminds me of Ketanji Brown Jackson. So smug, arrogant, really, really just nasty. So John Cornyn's asking a question. Hey, does the baby in the womb have value? And she says, I'm going to answer a more interesting question to me. Like, what? You're testifying in front of the Senate. And she says, yeah, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to answer. It's just like immediately she just can't help but having the one up. And this was the question that preceded the Hawley clip that we played earlier. And I just want to remind all of you, the Democrats invited her as the star witness. Cut 41 is one of their star witnesses saying abortion is an act of love. Under oath. In front of the U.S. Senate. This is not some random person in front of the Senate. These are people with PhDs that were brought by Democrats. They're saying abortion is an act of love. Play cut 41.
Abortion is normal. It is an act of love. And it is fundamentally healthcare.
Isaiah 5:20. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Who put darkness for light and light for darkness. Who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Isaiah 5:20. It's the only way I can respond to that. She has a PhD. She had to write a dissertation. Hey, Connor, just totally curious in the afternoon here before I speak to this wonderful group of students here in Wisconsin. What did she write her dissertation on, this Bridges woman? I'm just curious. Usually dissertations are publicly available. If I'm not mistaken, usually they could be found, right? Yeah. So I'm just curious, what on earth did she write her dissertation? A more interesting question I would like to answer by Professor Bridges. Connor is going to be on it. I'll report back tomorrow. I'll be just really interested to hear that. But I just, I'm kind of stumbling over my words because I'm looking at just these clips kind of come through and it's one after the other. Democrats called this meeting. They called this hearing as a way to try to get a press bump post Roe v. Wade. And they have a woman that says, if you don't believe men can become pregnant, that's right. If you don't believe men can become pregnant, you're transphobic. A professor at UC Berkeley. Then she goes on to say that a baby should be able to be terminated. She said, look, whoever's stronger, bigger, more developed should be able to crush the smaller. Remember, the idea of the moral argument against abortion is what? The strong must protect the weak, regardless of size and regardless of level of development. And then, to cap it all off, they have the woman say, well, an abortion is an act of love. And by the way, for all of you keeping score at home, abortion is not healthcare. Oh, yeah, and also, I forgot, they also infer that Senator Hawley is being violent and is making trans kids commit suicide. Quite a spectacle, Democrats.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.